Saturday morning, flying out of Fort Ord, California, 1988. I'm on a Black Hawk helicopter bound for the Presidio in San Francisco. It's about 113 miles north of Fort Ord, and it is a glorious morning. I have on my Gore-Tex jacket, my BDUs, and I have my civilian clothes on underneath all of that, and so for once, I'm not freezing cold on a helicopter flight. As we get close to the San Francisco area, the Bay Area, I'm looking out the front window of the cockpit, and I can see the very familiar Transamerica Tower. Like I said, this area is very familiar to me by now. And you can see the Transamerica Tower, and you can see the San Francisco Bay, and it looks like somebody has packed the bay in cotton. It's just socked in with fog. As we get up and start moving around, you can see the Golden Gate Bridge, which is actually orange. You can see the two orange arches sticking out from the what looks like cotton. It's that thick, the fog. And because I know the Presidio is right there where the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge starts, where the bridge starts or where it ends, depending on where you're coming from, the Presidio is right there. And so obviously we're not going to be landing anytime soon. The crew chief, you know, gives us the cut sign and with his finger circle, hey, we're going to circle around, no kidding. Well, as we bank out over the ocean, over the Pacific Ocean, I now look out the left-hand side door, and they fly with the doors open. And we're not that high. I'm not a marine biologist. But as I'm looking out into the deep, dark, electric blue of the Pacific Ocean, I can clearly see whales jumping out of the water, landing down again, and blowing the air through their blowholes. And I remember having this conscious thought. The decision to join the Army is going to pay off someday. I'm seeing things and I'm experiencing things that the people I grew up with will never experience. I am not wasting the best years of my youth. I'm actually making the best of them. And I'm going to be thinking about and remembering and talking about these days and the young men I served with until the day of my death. In the late 1980s, a group of young men who grew up without computers, cell phones, and social media will help end the Cold War. This is not based on a true story. This is a true story. That is right. Welcome back. This is Jason Dias, Doc Dias. It is so good to be talking to all of you again here on the 4th of July, which is when we're dropping the show, but of course you can listen to it whenever you want. I spent 10 years as a professional speaker, and I spoke all over the country with a lot of international stops, and there was never a moment where I didn't come off the stage and think, oh, I should have said more about this, or maybe less about that, or I should have said this differently. I had the same exact reaction when I ended the original Light Fighter podcast back on Veterans Day in 2022. So, real quick, I want to catch you up on what's been happening since then and where we're going with the epilogue series, because it is going to be more than one episode. All right. One of the best things that has happened since we ended the original Light Fighter podcast was I had a reunion with Sergeant Doyle Kruger. He and his wife are nurse practitioners. He's the doc now, basically. They are nurse practitioners in Iowa, and basically they're doctors without the sense of, you know, I'm better than you. And so they were in San Antonio for a conference. And of course, I live in New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof, not too far from San Antonio. My wife and I are going to be down in the city to see the Broadway show Aladdin at the Majestic Theater. Doyle and his wife were going to be at a medical conference right there downtown. We met up for dinner at Landry's, had a great meal and a great reminiscing. Folks, if you can, I know we always talk about these big reunions. It's hard to do that. We're all busy. We're all still relatively young. Not as young as we used to be, but relatively young. If you can, just even if it's on the phone, even if it's on the phone, have a conversation with one of your buddies. That was one of the most interesting things about this entire podcast experience, both the one I did about Desert Storm and the one I did about my time at Fort Ord, is when you spoke to people and you heard their voice, it was a time machine. It was a rocket time machine. You know, it was a warp speed time machine into the past, because the voices don't change. One of the most interesting things that I experienced in doing the podcast. All right. And of course, speaking of reunions, in the first podcast, I talked about my roommate, my one and only roommate when I was in the Army, Jim Bonola. Jimbo Bonola, Connecticut. He's lived 13 miles away from me for at least 10 years, right? He's right down the road in Cibolo. I live in New Braunfels. He lives right down the road in Cibolo. I've seen him 3 or 4 times since he got to Texas, and we're all busy. We're all busy. I get that. But take time to make a phone call to someone you haven't talked to in a while. Not every day. Not every day. But find some time to talk to people. It's not all about Facebook and social media. I know I said I was going to quit Facebook when I ended the Light Fighter podcast, but I thought about it. I really enjoyed a limited ability to reach out to some of y'all every now and then. And as I was putting together the epilogue, I got back in touch with some of y'all. I think it in my head is my version of the squad, okay? Those 8 or 9 people that I was so glad I reconnected with through the original podcast. And when we get back from the break, we're going to call it the MRE roll call. I reached out to a bunch of y'all because one of the things when I listened back to the original Light Fighter podcast series, Light Fighters, The Last Foot Soldiers of the Cold War, available on Apple Podcasts and podcast platforms everywhere, I realized I may have talked about myself too much. I didn't talk enough about everybody else. And so I reached out to a bunch of y'all with a question that has perplexed me since I got out of the Army. And that is, what was your favorite MRE? Favorite in air quotes, perhaps. And so we're going to talk about that, and we're going to do it all right after this. If you never served, you'll never know. And if you did, you'll never forget. Happy 4th of July to all of you. Much love to all of you today and every day. This is Doc Dias, and you're listening to Light Fighters, the Last Foot Soldiers of the Cold War. That is right. We are back on Light Fighters, the Last Foot Soldiers of the Cold War. The epilogue, episode 1, meal ready to eat. Who has time to say that in the field? You call it an MRE, this brown rectangular thing of food. It's like an original Amazon delivery, except it's full of food that'll keep you alive for the next 48 or 72 hours. And I reached out to a bunch of y'all. We're going to call this the MRE roll call. And asked you, hey, what was your favorite MRE? And you have to remember, we sometimes, for several days in a row, we would eat these things for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I mean, imagine having, chicken a la king for breakfast. You would never do that in the civilian world. Anyway, speaking of chicken a la king, I reached out to Alex Alonso and Ron Middleton, both 2nd Platoon guys from Alpha Company, and they said, hey, chicken a la king was my favorite, and I had kind of forgotten about chicken a la king. That was actually a really good meal. Alex then added, he sent me a message. He said, oh, and meatballs and barbecue sauce. I had completely forgotten about that meal, right? More about that later. Sergeant Epps, one of the guys that helped me with the first series, the Light Fighter series, the original Light Fighter series, he also said chicken a la king and added meatballs and barbecue sauce. I was like, wow, we're on a roll here. It's gonna be all of that. Lieutenant Eigel added chicken and rice. I don't remember that one. I'm sure it existed, because my favorite nobody mentioned. I'll get to that last. Okay, so Lieutenant Eigel, our West Pointer, chicken and rice. Eric Anderson, Frank, Doc Mew, who's had the idea for the original Light Fighter podcast, my favorite soldier of all time, Sergeant Kruger, I couldn't believe because more people picked this than anything else. Dehydrated pork and beef patties. Never saw that one coming. Everybody remembers these, right? They were like, I had to explain, like vacuum wrapped sponges that I think if you added water to it, turned into a hamburger patty or a pork patty. I never liked them. And you could eat them dry. You didn't have to put water on them. And, oh, by the way, I know we had those things called heat tabs. They looked like little purple surfboards, and you would put them under your canteen cup, and one heat tab would heat up one canteen cup of water or something, and you could put the meal in the water and kind of a boiling bag kind of thing. That was rare, by the way. You know, when we were out in the field, we could be out in the field for, you know, 20 to 28, 30 days, and you did not get a heat tab for every meal. We ate a lot of these meals cold, and eating the dehydrated pork and beef patties raw was not pleasant. If you were dying to know what that was like, don't do anything dangerous, but maybe just go take a bite out of a sponge that's been under your bathroom sink since, I don't know, the second Bush administration. That's kind of what those things were like. But I remembered after so many people picked, I think it was desiccated pork patties. I don't think it was dehydrated. I think it said on the wrapper desiccated. I don't remember. Anyway, if you could heat it up and get water in it so it kind of expanded to like a piece of meat or pork, it wasn't so bad. If you could mix it with, and everybody mentioned this, ramen. If you could add ramen to your MRE meal, it's like eating out. It changed the entire dynamic of any meal. Chicken a la king, you can add it to ramen. Meatballs and barbecue sauce, that is a gourmet meal in the field if you can heat up some ramen. And oh, by the way, ramen, you can also eat ramen raw. You don't have to heat up, crunch it down if you absolutely have to. Of course, light infantry, we carried a lot of stuff, but you could get, I don't know what, 10, 12 packages of ramen at the very bottom of your rucksack, and after a while, they'd be all cracked up, and like ramen dust you're adding to the water. Everybody mentioned ramen, and I think it was either Lieutenant Eigel or one of the last people I sent that question to, they mentioned Tabasco sauce. I was never a Tabasco sauce guy. To the best of my knowledge, I've never had Tabasco sauce. I don't remember if the MREs came with Tabasco sauce, I think at some point they did, or if guys would just bring their own Tabasco sauce. Tabasco sauce doesn't take up a lot of room in your rucksack. Some guys would keep it in their cargo pockets, you know, cargo pocket, a package of cigarettes, a lighter, whatever. We're going to talk about that too in episode 2, Life in the Field. What were some of your best tips of the trade when we were out there humping those clicks? The discussion about the MREs with all of you was so fun. But I think my favorite one, I could not believe that the most votes, is either a tie or the pork and beef patties won. Chicken a la king was either tied or second. Okay, I would agree. Chicken a la king was not a bad meal, even when it was cold. My favorite meal was beef slices in barbecue sauce, and nobody even mentioned that one. But Kenny Woods, who picked chicken a la king as his favorite, he added something that I had thought about when I first asked the question. He said, but what I really liked was when we were in Australia and got their version of an MRE. And it was really good. They had these really cool cookies and tea and sugar packets and brown sugar and cheeses. And just, it was really good. The dried meats, you know, it was just so good. And Sergeant Epps added that too, that he would hump out Vienna sausages and hot dogs, you know, stuff that had a long shelf life. It was so, just, you know, when you think about it now, you know, I went to P.F. Chang's. I'm recording on the 3rd of July, this portion. I'm recording out of chronological order on this one. But on this very day, the 3rd of July, Wednesday, 3rd of July, I went to P.F. Chang's with my son for lunch. And it was great. It was great. Mongolian beef on brown rice. We lived on food that today you would only eat in the most dire of circumstances. You know, a hurricane comes through, Hurricane Beryl, which is, I think, is schwacking Jamaica right now. Hey, man, hide the reefer, man. We lived on that stuff. We lived on it. For days and days and days and weeks at a time. Occasionally, we would get a hot meal in the field, but pretty much lunch was going to be, and dinner and breakfast was going to be an MRE. Okay, when we get back, wrapping up episode one of the other things that I did not talk about enough on the first podcast series was our interactions with the other branches of the military. And so I want to talk about that, and we're going to do it all right after this. That is right. Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. What a great place to start. I would completely agree. No hashtag required. All right. Navy didn't have a lot of interaction with the Navy, to be perfectly honest. I was sworn in at the MEP station by a naval officer, so that was pretty much the extent of my contact with the Navy. But speaking of the Navy, people sometimes forget the Marine Corps is part of the Navy. And we got up close and personal with the Marine Corps at 29 Palms, California, the Mabex field problem in 1987. And it was kind of us. It wasn't kind of, it was us versus the Marines. And it was training, and they had controllers. And at the end of the entire field problem, the guys from the 7th ID one. That is common knowledge. Everybody has confirmed that with me when I asked about it. And yet, I'll never forget, in that containment area there at 29 Palms, they always have a little PX or something set up that, you know, the soldiers and the Marines can go to. You would kind of meet in a centralized area and then get sent out into the field. The Marines had a different, not better, I'm not saying it was better, but the Marines had a different vibe when I met them at the PX and at the Shopette there in 29 Palms, California. And it was just interesting. It was their uniforms were a little different, right? We carried the same weapons, but their uniforms were a little different. Of course, none of them were wearing their dress blues. Everyone agrees the Marines have the best dress uniforms. But to see them up close, I would say here's a big vocabulary word, they seemed more bucolic. They seemed more from the country, right, versus the inner city. It, just a different vibe, but not a better one. Not a better one. We won that field problem. And that was meeting the Marine Corps up close and personal. Great, great fighting men, Marines, they were. But we were really good, too, in the 4th Battalion, 21st Infantry. Okay. The other branch of the service that we came into close contact with during my time that I did not talk about on the first series, on the original series, was when we would go up to Travis Air Force Base when we were on call. The mission of the 7th Infantry Division was that we can have boots on the ground anywhere in the world in 18 hours. Now, we're good, but we cannot walk to places on the other side of the Pacific Ocean in 18 hours. We can't even swim there. We need the Air Force to get us there. And so occasionally, I don't remember if it was a platoon or a company would be sent to Travis Air Force Base near Sacramento, California, up in Northern California. I guess it's Northern California. I don't remember exactly how far it was from Fort Ord, but it was further than San Francisco. And so it's the capital. Sacramento is the capital, obviously. And Travis Air Force Base. I did that duty twice. And I loved it each time. And what I remember, and I'm from an Air Force family. My dad is an Air Force veteran, spent 32 years in the Air Force and working for the Air Force, 32 years at Randolph Air Force Base. My brother, John Christopher, a 25-plus year career in the United States Air Force. When you look at this hallway in my parents' home, the military wall, as we call it, it's all Air Force. And then right here, green little section of me at Fort Sill and at Fort Ord and, after the war in Desert Storm. Anyway, it's just kind of interesting that I've lived around, another big vocabulary word coming up here, this bifurcated military community near San Antonio, Texas, or in San Antonio, Texas, that has and will always be divided between the Army and the Air Force. And I was always, always familiar with the friendly rivalry between the Army and the Air Force. Well, at Travis Air Force Base, we're up there, we're away from Fort Ord. I think it was maybe a platoon. We woke up in the morning, the Air Force put us up in really nice billets, really nice barracks. We get up in the morning, we do sick call, we do PT, and then it's time to go to breakfast. And so we go into the Air Force's version of the cafeteria or the dining facility, and it's very nice. The Air Force is maybe a more professional service than the light infantry in that they wear, a really nice shirt and these really nice slacks and these patent leather shoes, and they look so nice. And I'm sure they're great airmen and women. We roll in our jungle BDUs and our standard BDUs with our jungle boots and our jump boots and our combat boots. And I will never forget the looks on the faces of the airmen, the guys, in that cafeteria when we walked in. We just kind of, it was like swagger coming into. And this blue, this sea of blue, suddenly this jungle green platoon of barbarians crashes breakfast at Travis Air Force Base. And oh, by the way, in this particular case, the Air Force outlasted us on this one. Travis Air Force Base is still there to this very second. And of course, Fort Ord is not. Fort Ord is no longer there. I will never forget that. I was aware of it as it was happening. The guys in the Air Force, and like I said, it's a friendly rivalry. But those guys, those airmen, the guys in that dining facility looking at us were not just looking at us, they were looking down at us. It's a fact. All right? There were no fistfights, there were no profanities, but you could feel it. However, I don't know if they call them air women or they're all airmen. I can remember seeing the faces of some of the women in the dining facility when we rolled in, and their reaction was like, well, hello, doctor. Well, hello, what do we have here? I will never forget that either. I loved rolling with y'all, whether it was Travis Air Force Base or 29 Palms, wherever we went, wherever we were, it was great to be with y'all. It was an honor to be with y'all. Next time on Epilogue, Episode 2 of Light Fighters, The Last Foot Soldiers of the Cold War, The Essence of the Light Infantry. Not in garrison, not on post support, in the field, what it was like. Let's just start at 10 days. Go out in your backyard for 10 days. And you have to stay out there for 10 days. What would you take with you? Would you have enough food? Would you know how to survive? Would you trust that people would get you the things you needed to stay alive? Don't forget a toothbrush and a roll of toilet paper, by the way. In the field, we're going to do it next time on Light Fighters, the last foot soldiers of the Cold War. Epilogue. And until then, no slack. Cold steel. Bushmasters and Night Fighters, Boar, brother, Boar.
All the old paintings on the tomb, they do the sand dance, don't you know? If they move too quick, away.